KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't crazy.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, two of the busiest drinks in Hollywood with some very big name clients. And we hear from a couple of their former patients on using their unconventional techniques. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
I'm joined by my banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. John is in Las Vegas at the gathering of theater owners, CinemaCon, as we tape. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, how goes CinemaCon? We know that as we tape, the theater owners are raging mad about an announcement from four studios that they will be offering premium for $30. You get to watch a movie in the comfort of your home 30 days ahead of the DVD release, and that has gone down badly.
It's supposed to be a convention celebrating the great relationship between the movie studios and the theater owners, and it's turned into something of a war because in the middle of the convention, without the knowledge, apparently, of the National Association of Theater Owners, which throws the convention, Warner Brothers, Sony, Universal, and Fox announced they were going to shorten the window, meaning the time it takes from a movie's theatrical release to its availability on satellite dish or on your cable network by 30 days. So within 60 days of a film's theatrical release, you will be able to get a movie a month before it's available in DVD stores. It's going to cost a lot. It's going to be $30, but this really sent a crack through the middle of the convention just as everybody was making nice.
So that did not go well. Meanwhile, the studios are there hawking their wares and trying to lure the theater owners into wanting to book their films.
Exactly. I mean, so they're trotting out the big movies like the next Pirates of the Caribbean film, the next Harry Potter, the next Transformers film. They're also trying to generate interest in kind of those sleeper movies, if you will. The Zookeeper is a Sony movie. So they're trying to drum up interest in their upcoming titles. But I have to say the announcement of the shortened window has kind of destroyed whatever goodwill was formed in the first few days of the convention.
This is one of the issues that the studios are going to have to grapple with. And we're seeing a changing of the guard at a couple of the studios, sort of underway gradually. James Murdoch has been promoted at News Corp, the son of Rupert, brought back into the company. We talked about him a few weeks ago. James Murdoch was overseeing operations in Europe and Asia, which he will continue to do, but now he's the number three man in the company. And this looks like Rupert Murdoch, unlike Sumner Redstone at Viacom, who is an octogenarian and actually older than Rupert Murdoch, is planning for succession.
Rupert is 80, and he's certainly grown the company impressively, but it does feel, not just at Fox, there's also a changing of a guard at Warner Brothers, too, this week.
Yes, Alan Horn retired at the end of March. And he had a very successful almost 12-year run, all the Harry Potters, The Dark Knight, Inception, all kinds of movies that really worked. And Jeff Robinoff, who is his hand-picked lieutenant, is succeeding him. It's a situation where there's still a pregnant pause at Warner Brothers because they extended the contract of Barry Meyer, who currently runs it, and they've created this sort of three-headed Hydra beast with the head of the television guy and the video guy and Jeff Robinoff, the film guy, all in this office together, sort of equal. People are wondering which one of them, if any, would emerge to take over in 2013 when Barry Meyer's contract is up. So Warner Brothers also definitely the feeling that change is in the works.
But I will say this of Warner Brothers. It's one of the few studios that has been able to grow huge franchises while working with interesting filmmakers. So even though they have Batman, they have Harry Potter, they're making movies with people like Chris Nolan, Alfonso Cuarón. They have figured out a way, I think, that most studios have not quite managed to do, to make interesting movies that are incredibly commercial.
Even Warner Brothers has had its problems with some movies. Sucker Punch did not do well when it opened recently. But, you know, the story that seems to be kind of fixating Hollywood right now and fans of entertainment is not so much the fate of a movie studio. It's the fate of a TV show, Mad Men, a show that doesn't even get that big ratings, but nonetheless has an incredibly passionate audience.
And the creator of the show, Matthew Weiner, wants to make sure that he is able to tell his stories the way he wants to tell them. And in his fight with AMC, they have asked that he cut some time from the show. I think it's 2 minutes. Maybe cut some salaries from his cast, and maybe add some product placement. I mean, it doesn't sound as if he's happy about any of those options.
I mean, these are bargaining points, and what's happening here is that Matthew Weiner, who is not an easy guy and doesn't have a reputation as being an easy guy, is negotiating very publicly. He has a lot of sympathy, though. People are saying, hey, this guy created Mad Men, which put AMC on the map. AMC was a channel that nobody really cared about until Mad Men came along. Since then, they've had some hits, Breaking Bad, The Walking Dead. I mean, they've had a pretty strong batting average, but a lot of people love Mad Men and feel that it began with Mad Men. And they kind of feel like, even though there's talk of a $30 million contract over 3 years for Matthew Weiner, I haven't really heard people saying, oh, he's greedy. There, it's more like, let the artist have his freedom.
No, and he's positioned it very well by saying, you know, you want to cut 2 minutes out of my baby. And even 2 minutes in, you know, in an hour television doesn't seem like a lot. But to somebody who cares about every frame of his show, I guess it's a huge amount.
There's, of course, the Mad Men fan blog, and he's made a point of speaking to the Mad Men fan blog, at least to some degree directly, to express that, you know, this isn't about money, this is about integrity.
Well, if you can't get the network on your side, get the fans.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Just after we recorded the banter, wouldn't you know, Matthew Weiner and AMC reached a deal. So maybe negotiating in the media and getting those fans all riled up really works. For many people in show business, a vital member of their team, aside from their agent and their manager and their lawyer and their publicist, is their therapist. And it's possible that industry professionals are more likely to be in therapy than people in other professions, maybe because so much of the work involves putting yourself on the line and risking rejection that can be very public. Our guests today are well known to many in the business, but we first learned about them in a recent New Yorker magazine article by staff writer Dana Goodyear. She profiled therapist Barry Michaels and talked about the sometimes unconventional approach developed by his mentor, psychiatrist Phil Stutz. 25 years ago, Stutz started training Michaels, and though neither will talk about his clientele, it's fair to say both have treated some very big industry players, as well as high-profile and very troubled stars. And those are the folks who can afford the treatment. Michael's starting rate is $360 an hour, and while Stutz won't say what he charges, we're told it's more. The two offer a hybrid of Jungian therapy and cognitive behavioral techniques, or tools as they call them. I asked Phil Stutz how he and Barry Michaels got to be two of the go-to Los Angeles therapists for show business people.
We didn't know we were until this article, actually.
This was news to you?
I think both of us are creative. We're interested in creative issues, and I think we're passionate about it. So I think when they meet us, it's not an abstraction. I think they feel like we're living this as best as we can.
And from a pragmatic point of view, Phil trained me, and he really is the author of all of the ideas in the article. And he also referred so many people to me from his practice. That's really how I got into it.
One leads to the other leads to the other. I mean, it's not like you're advertising in Variety.
No, just all word of mouth.
What's probably unusual for both of us is we get most of our referrals from other patients. We don't get too many from other shrinks.
And then your waiting rooms, you find that your people are running into each other or trying not to run into each other.
It's interesting. It's changed over the years. You know, 25 years ago, I think people were more reluctant.
Yeah.
Hardly anybody really cares anymore, it seems like.
But do they network?
Not anymore. There was one incident a long time ago where that happened.
You know what the funny thing is? The actors don't mind it, even the famous ones. The ones that mind it are the CEOs and the studio heads, and because somebody is, you know, if they see somebody, they're afraid they're going to ask them for a favor. Ask them for a deal. Ask them to read something.
Right.
So they don't like.
I find the agents don't like it either, unless they're courting somebody.
Given that individuals are individuals, do the agents have one kind of issue and the screenwriters have a different kind of issue and the producers have a different kind of issue from that? Is that, what's your experience?
I think you can generalize a little bit. Look, every individual is unique, obviously. And when somebody walks in the room, you're treating an individual, not a profession.
Having said that.
Yeah, agents don't have long attention spans. You know, they have trouble focusing on one thing. They often are secretly afraid to make difficult phone calls. Writers, on the other hand, have very unique problems, you know, with regard to disciplining themselves and watching, you know, what they do and structuring their time. And actors have to audition and face rejection over and over and over again. So
there are certain broad traits, we
broad
could say.
Generalities, yeah.
So it's mentioned in this story that you have had so many Oscar nominees in the practice that you have a strategy for dealing with the whole thing called the 96-hour Academy Awards principle.
You know, my rules of life are there's uncertainty, there's pain, and it requires constant effort. And you can't abrogate those rules. I don't care how many Academy Awards you've won. So I find the high lasts roughly 96 hours. And after that, the person's a little bit stunned because life is going on just as it was. They just can't believe it. And once in a while, they really crash badly. The principle isn't a treatment for it. It's just I just try to warn them in advance before. You know, if they get nominated, I put them in the Army, you know, for that.
To prepare.
To prepare, yeah.
If they win, if they don't win.
Yes, that's correct.
So, Barry, I don't know if you both do this. I know Barry does this. You use the F word a lot, in apparently not so much outside of therapy, but in therapy.
Yes.
You do that too, Phil? You
not
don't seem like an F word kind of guy looking at you, but maybe you are.
The f*** are you talking about?
I'll consider myself corrected. So what's the thinking there? I don't know which one of you guys wants to take that. Barry, why don't you?
Well, I never really analyzed it before Dana pointed it out to me, and I think it's really for two reasons.
Dana being the author of the New Yorker article.
Exactly. The first is hopefully a psychotherapeutic dialogue shakes a person up. And to me, the swearing is part of that. It's part of the noting that this is serious. You know, this really means something. I think the other reason is that I feel very passionate about my patients, about what they're doing, about what they're trying to achieve in their lives. And for some reason, when I get really passionate, that's where I go, you know, language-wise.
I think for me, I don't know that it's necessary to use the word, but there's an imperative in the word. It's like, I'm serious about this. I want you to do this. And it's not, you know, which brings up a whole other issue, is do we tell people what to do? And we don't. I mean, both of us stay away from that. Like except if someone's going to self-destruct or they need to go to AA or something like that. But we tell them the structure, whatever they're going to do, there's a correct way to do it. And that you can be quite directive about. The specific decision, the course of action, that's up to them. So it's a combination of complete free will and an imperative.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Phil Stutz and Barry Michaels, a psychiatrist and psychotherapist who treat lots of very well-known people in the entertainment industry. Michaels was profiled in a recent New Yorker magazine article by Dana Goodyear entitled Hollywood Shadows, Therapy for the Movie Industry. Stutz and Michaels apply their particular brand of treatment, a hybrid of Jungian ideas and cognitive behavioral tools, to help writers who are blocked and executives who may not be blocked enough. A key tool in their work involves embracing your shadow and coping with your part X. Here's Phil Stutz explaining the difference between these two ideas.
Think of North and South America. So North America would be your conscious
right.
mind, or if you want to call it your ego. South America would be your shadow. They're like two compartments in their mind. It's always consistent. It's always there. Now, part X is like Al-Qaeda. It's a virus. It's an infection. It can infect North America or South America. Normally, it infects both of them at the same time. Part X is like a twisted version of the shadow, or it takes some of its qualities and turns them into negatives.
The analogy in the article is to like a very willful two-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
That would be excellent. Yeah, that would be excellent.
Another way to differentiate them, I think, is that Part X acts through you without your being aware of it. Whereas the shadow is something that you can actually become aware of. And when you become aware of it, it has certain benefits.
Well, I was going to say The Shadow sounds very negative. It sounds like something out of a scary movie. But The Shadow is actually, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, is the fountain of creativity.
Correct.
Correct.
So you want your shadow to be your friend.
Yes.
But there's a catch.
Oh, okay.
So the shadow is the source of all these things, but most people don't think so. They don't realize that. Because if you want all that stuff, you have to pay. And what you're paying basically in vulnerability. So everybody has an ideal image of themselves, and it never includes the shadow, never. The harder you work to maintain your ideal image, the more you're pushing the shadow away. That's why all perfectionism is anti-creative.
That's why I told the writer, at the first writer interviewed at the beginning of the article, to pray every time he sat down to write, first to pray to write the worst sentence he had ever written. If you're willing to write the worst sentence, you're willing to write anything.
And if you don't let the shadow in, you can block yourself, I guess, right?
Is that yeah, that would be the classic example, is complete block, yeah.
I'm treating a guy who stutters whenever he represses his shadow.
So if he starts to stutter, he knows that he's probably repressing some aspect of his personality.
At that moment, he's got to see his shadow and say, I love you.
Yeah.
Okay, you're here with me.
And reversal of desire. Who wants it?
You
Phil.
Do that one.
The typical human desire, the master desire of all desires, is to avoid. And basically, you're avoiding pain and unpleasantness, and it dominates most people's lives. So the reversal of desire says that which I normally avoid, I want. Now, here's the reason for that. Pain, and fear is a kind of pain, gets worse if you try to avoid it, if you back away from it.
So in practical terms, we'll use an example from my world. I write a story about a particular studio. I know that they don't like me because I've written many stories about things that they've done that may not be brilliant. And I know that invariably they will hector me, call my boss.
Oh,
you know,
this is good.
Just
it's perfect.
So normally, of course, I say to myself, all right, I got to call this guy and just hold the phone until he gets tired.
Mm-hmm.
That's my normal strategy. But you're saying...
I'm saying you should look at it as an opportunity, not any opportunity with him to change your relationship with him.
No.
It's an opportunity to change your own self-image and change your relationship to other situations that you want to move forward into. You're going to have to call the guy anyway.
Right.
The more time that lapses between your knowing you have to call him and calling him, the more your self-esteem and confidence goes down. So you have to say, no matter what happens in this call, the moment I make the call, I win. That's called a pre-win. And the reversal of desire basically picks out the thing you're afraid of in the call, which he's going to now explain to you, hatred and misunderstanding, in a minute, because that's the in extremis, this principle. And it's very applicable in show business. I mean, for almost every, you know, we could go over every category of job description and talk about how it would apply.
Hatred and misunderstanding is a force. You think of it as a force that's sort of extant in the universe that hates you and is going to deliberately misunderstand your motives, all right? So the more willing you are to face hatred and misunderstanding and to stand up internally to it, the stronger and more powerful you are.
So is the perception that you are on the receiving end of the hatred and misunderstanding more prevalent in Hollywood, you think, than other industries?
Probably,
yeah.
Because it's a creative industry? Because
more people that can take a shot at you. In other words, the press can take a shot at you. The bosses can take a shot at you. The peers can take a shot at you. Nikki Fink can take a shot at you. You're 360 degrees exposed.
Coming up after a short break, more from Hollywood therapists Phil Stutz and Barry Michaels. And a couple of their former patients talk about using their tools. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Barry Michaels and Phil Stutz are two unconventional therapists with big Hollywood practices. They were profiled in a recent New Yorker magazine article by Dana Goodyear. You can find a link to that on our website, kcrw.org/thebusiness. Michaels and Stutz give their patients cognitive behavioral tools to help them cope with life in the business. Phil Stutz explains one tool they commonly use called cosmic rage.
Okay, here's what cosmic rage is. Somebody is having too great of an effect on you. You're too worried about what they think. You need their validation. They're pushing you around, whatever it is. And you need to basically get them off you. You need to have some space for yourself. The genesis of this was stage actors in New York before, you know, be nervous. And before the curtain would open, they would scream out to the audience, usually F you at the top of their, now no one could hear them because there were three big thick curtains there. But they, and they would really expend themselves. And what would happen after that would be they'd be much less nervous once the curtains opened, right? So they'd vanquish the audience, in effect. So then I started to extrapolate that to other situations. A lot of times it's just you get up in the morning and worry about someone's thinking of you. Certainly if you hand it in a script, you can be worried about what the community is going to think. Now, here's the secret of Cosmic Rage. You don't direct it right at the person. You direct it to the sides of them, to the left and right side.
This is in your, as you visualize
you
the person.
You visualize it, yeah, because this is not an ad hominem personal thing. These are about forces in the universe, if you will, that you can't destroy a force. You can't make it go away. All you can do is push it back. And when you push the force back with rage, you get this little circle, and this little circle is called the I am space. It means I have space to be myself, and people love it.
We want to make clear to our listeners, this is not meant to be deployed in real world where you go into your...
No, never.
Never.
...to the real
never.
Person. Because that's a Hollywood... I mean, you saw Swimming with Sharks. I mean, people do direct actual rage, you know, in the industry. It's a cliche, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No, this is in many ways the opposite of that, actually. You're not actually dealing with the person. The whole philosophy of it is you're subjected to judgment and you don't even know where it's coming from. The other person might not even be thinking about you. It might just be in your own head. I've given Cosmic Rage out to many, many people. And many for many people, it's actually the first time that they've really felt free, kind of psychically free of what anyone thinks of them. And it's an amazing, almost, you know, kind of euphoric feeling.
Now, I know you're not going to name any patients, even if they were on the record talking to The New Yorker. But let's put it this way. You have treated some television writers, and they've created characters based on you. One of them was in Party of Five, and one of them was in 24.
You were in Party of Five?
Apparently.
Is this news to you? You didn't know that?
It was. I have
to go back and watch Party of Five see yourself? Okay, but you saw the 24 character.
I did.
Which is called, I forgot the name of it.
Barry Landis.
Yeah. Barry Landis, okay. What did you think? Were you like, that is so me? Or like, oh my God.
It was really freaky to see an actor who looked so much like me. I mean, it was really scary. It was a very strange experience.
But did you think he got you?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. I can't really see myself in a terrorist hostage situation. So,
close your eyes.
Right. Nor do I really see myself with Alicia Cuthbert. So,
Barry Michaels and Phil Stutz are a psychotherapist and psychiatrist, respectively, who practice in Los Angeles. In a couple of months, Michaels will hold seminars for the public using their technique. We've posted his email on our webpage, kcrw.com/thebusiness. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
One of Michael's former patients is Howard Gordon, who was an executive producer on the Fox series 24. He's the one who created a therapist character based on Michaels. One of the tools that Gordon says he's used successfully is called pre-disappointment. As described in The New Yorker, Michaels instructs clients who fear a possibly crushing professional disappointment to prepare for the worst by envisioning themselves falling backward into the sun and saying, "I am willing to lose everything," as they are consumed by a giant fireball. After that, they imagine themselves transformed into a sunbeam and saying, "I am infinite." Gordon says imagining disappointment in advance empowers him.
Generally, what happens, you imagine the worst, and I guess by going through the exercise of imagining a whole spectrum of responses, you prepare yourself for them psychologically instead of defaulting to one that's based on fear and catastrophe. And it helps you, I think, function better as a writer creatively, but also as a writer negotiating the business. You know, the pretty fickle and unpredictable business. of Hollywood to business based on rejection, so and failure. I mean, even if you're lucky enough to get your pilot to you know, you win at so many places, but it's like Vegas. You ultimately do lose. Eventually, you're canceled. Eventually, you know, you come to an end. So even if you're lucky enough to win, you're going to lose.
Another tool Gordon got from his former therapist, Barry Michaels, is cosmic rage. That's the one that involves imagining yourself yelling a common phrase that includes the F word a bunch of times at a room full of faceless critics. Gordon says he still uses cosmic rage every day.
I'm not kidding. It really is. Every day, there's always something to rail about. And that's why, you know, the perspective is, you know, invaluable.
Molly Newman is a producer on the ABC series Brothers and Sisters and another former Michaels patient. She uses one of the techniques that he taught her for dealing with pitch meetings and other stressful business encounters. The idea is to imagine that people in the meeting are covered in dust. At the same time, Newman invites the aspect of herself that Michaels calls the shadow into the meeting. The shadow is a link to the unconscious self. It's a vulnerable part of the psyche, but it's also the source of all creativity and agility in life and business. But first, dust.
I like to think of it as, you know, you open a giant vacuum cleaner bag on the ceiling, and they're completely covered. There's no light coming from them, and there's no expectation of receiving anything from them. And then you place your shadow somewhere in the room, and you visualize your shadow as the only person in the room with you. And so therefore it becomes easier. You're less focused on what they're thinking, what the audience is thinking at any moment, whether you're selling your idea or not. And it's just a way of finding a way to concentrate on what you're passionate about, which is your writing and what you want to say. And that's what it boils down to, I suppose. I mean, writers have something to say, and sometimes actually having to verbalize it, we freeze up.
Newman says she knows lots of industry professionals who are in therapy, but not all of them are willing to talk about it publicly. She thinks that could hamper their progress in dealing with their issues. But then again, the business may not be good for that kind of progress.
You know, 75% of the people I work with have been in therapy at one point or another and admit it. But the interesting thing is, I was having lunch with a colleague, and I mentioned the New Yorker piece that I had been interviewed for it about Barry, and his eyes flew open, and he said, anonymously, of course, and I said, well, no, and he was just shocked, but for me, it was another case of, well, if I'm anonymous, then I'm hiding the shadow again. I'm hiding the part of me that it has to admit, you know, I need some help sometimes. So I think maybe people aren't as anxious to admit that they need help in Hollywood because it's so Darwinian. It's just another point of weakness.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. You can also hear us on your phone with our KCRW iPhone and Android apps. And of course, you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And like us on Facebook at KCRW's The Business, where you can comment about the show and where we have ongoing conversations about all things showbiz. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.